Live from Toronto, it's Hebsy on Sports, episode number 265. Are we there? Can you hear me? Hey, sports fans. Mark Hebsher here in the Little Italy studio. This is a perfect way to end 2021, isn't it? It's so exciting. Toronto Mike is manning the mics and riding the pots in New Toronto. I'm here in the studios in Little Italy. And it's the last day of the worst year, or second worst year in my life. Ugh, 2021. Get out of here. I don't want to look ahead to 20. I want to look ahead to 2022. I don't want to feature the biggest stories of 2021 like everybody else. The year-end countdown. The top 1,000 stories of 2021. No, none. There's no stories from 2021. I'm not interested. You know what I'm interested in? The spring. Because by then, this is going to be gone. 85% chance, I heard today on Bodog. 85% chance of by spring training for baseball, there won't be a pandemic. It'll peak sometime this month. It's going to drop off rapidly, sharply, like in South Africa, and everybody's going to be okay by the spring. There you go. So we're talking spring, and that's why our guest today is Joe Siddle, the Blue Jays television analyst, Jamie Campbell's sidekick. He's not like Gabby Hayes kind of a sidekick. He's, you know, yeah, anyway, he's good. He's like, let's go to Joe. What did you think of that play? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? The catcher's down on one knee. How the heck is he going to get to that ball? Anyway, Joe's very opinionated like me. We love that about him, right, Mike? He's opinionated.
Right.
Tells it like it is. We're going to talk to him later in the show. In the meantime, we need a big boost in the sports world because, oh my God, the cancellation of the World Junior Hockey Tourney broke a lot of hearts, caused some major financial worries for Bell Media. Not that I feel bad for Bell Media. My friend Gene Velaitis, who was let go by Bell Media, I guess, in some incarnation, or I know Rogers Bloom. He might have been let go by the biggest corporations in the country. Has no love lost for Bell Media, especially what they do on Bell Let's Talk Day, like the day after all that, and they fire people, blow out all the TSN radio stations. They got lucky with the Grey Cup. Grey Cup could have been canceled. Ugh. Anyway, they got some make goods to do. We'll explain what all that means. And there was the passing of the legendary John Madden, an icon with a mic on. I knew John when he was a rookie announcer on CBS. You know that? He used to come on my radio show. I'll tell you more about that later on. The Leafs and Raptors are going to be playing home games in front of family and close friends, it looks like, for the next few weeks at least. No more than 1,000 fans will be allowed as new restrictions take place thanks to the Ford government. Thank you. Again, maybe one day I'll tell you some stories from high school about the Ford family.
Wow.
Some of the nefarious things that they got into.
Wow.
I have to protect. Well, there's a few people I have to protect.
Well, there was a Globe article once.
No, there's legal things involved here. I got to be really careful with it, but man, oh man. And we're in that Christmas, New Year's dead zone, I guess you could say. Mike, you're probably the expert on this. If my kids were the age of your kids and I was going through this, I would have damaged myself, if you know what I mean.
Ouch.
I don't think I could have gotten through this. How are you managing?
Okay, so you're referring to the fact that we only found out yesterday the kids are not going back Monday and Tuesday. So because normal years, typical years, this is still a dead zone because like once the school's out and your work schedule changes, like I set an alarm to make sure I was awake for this because there's no guarantee I'm up for a 9 o'clock start in this week. This week is really a big blur. Like I could be asleep. I think Monica's still in bed. Like, and normally, you know, so all the structure disappears and it's all a blur. It's like a bunch of Sundays. There's no hockey games like for my kid to play. There's really nothing going on. So Hebsy on Sports and donating blood are the two items on my calendar today. And then it's Happy New Year. But so let me just take this moment here to say, yes. Hebsy man, Happy New Year, buddy.
You can wish me a happy birthday too, because thousands will tomorrow because it'll show up on Facebook. And my birthday is January the 1st. And this is the first time that I can remember anyway, that the day we're doing the show is like this is the big day. Like this is New Year's Eve. I'm going out tonight against my better judgment.
Where are you going, buddy?
I'm going up to our favorite restaurant. Okay. Wow. But I've been assured that all the protocols are in place.
It's airborne, you know.
Everybody takes a rapid test like every 15 minutes or whatever it is. They take the test before they go into work, right? and negative, no symptoms, you know, they go into work. And
a quick aside before we get into the sports, but have you ever thought about maybe we should stop running? Like, you ever think like, okay, here we are trying to dodge this airborne, highly contagious virus. Maybe we stop. I'm not saying you go to a party with like, 10,000 unvaccinated people, but maybe did you get your booster? What's the update on your booster?
This afternoon at 2:00.
Okay. Maybe when that kicks in, we stop running. You ever think about it?
Everybody's different. Look, everyone's different. Look, when I see those games in the States with 70,000 in the stand, even indoors, even the hockey games, like, 15, 20,000, I'm like, come on. We can't put 1,000 people. Oh, no, let's do it. Like, I don't know. Anyway, we'll get into that later on.
Okay.
Well, that's a whole separate story. So this is the wrong week to have started at 9 a.m. Is that what you're telling me? We should have started next week.
Well, remember, at 9 a.m. What's the big thing that gets you up and gets you going? Okay. Oh, I got to get these kids to school. Well, I do a preschool thing. Okay.
I don't remember that. It's been many years since I've had to do that.
Well, obviously.
Can't they go to school? Wait a sec. How old are they?
There's a 5 and 7, these two little
and
ones.
And they can't go by themselves? I did with my brothers.
No, not
how far is the school?
I would say that's maybe 2.5K, but 5 and 7. Oh, so I can tell you, I just did this a decade ago.
Because I used to go uphill in the snow in both directions when I was a kid. I was 5.
I'm keen to have these kids do it on their own, but I can tell you right now, Monica's not going to let me send the 5 and 7-year-old out on their own yet.
Nor maybe will the rest of the neighborhood. They're going to look at you like, what the
fuck? I'll have cops at my door.
What kind of father are you? Where are you? Home all the time?
Right.
Oh my God. What are you doing in that house? That's what they're wondering.
Oh, I'll be probably.
Who are these strange people that are going into your house?
Child care will say, hey, maybe you guys aren't fit to be parents. What are you doing sending your kid, your 7 and 5-year-old? But anyway, so they're the anchors. They get you up and they give you the structure and then your day starts by like whatever. So that doesn't exist this week. But apparently we're back at school. Wednesday is the word I heard yesterday. We'll see if that holds, but it's all a crapshoot, buddy.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Listen, I feel for you. I really do. 2022 is going to be better. It's got to be.
We said that last year.
I know. listen, folks. So a couple of weeks ago, I was claiming financial hardship, and we didn't know about the future of this show. A lot of it had to do with my mental state of mind, because let's face it. I mean, when people aren't doing their normal thing, you start thinking, your mind gets away from you and it's like, what do I need to do this for? I'm not making any
You were ready
money.
To quit.
Sponsors. I was ready to quit.
Right.
Last year at this time, year one of the pandemic, we did, Mike. We took the entire month of December off.
Right.
For financial reasons, but other stuff too, man. It was just tough to talk about sports when
there were no sports going on.
So here's where we're at right now. We've started, like I said, a new format. We had Rob Baker on last week. It was great. We had Humble Howard on the week before. He was great. We've got Joe Siddle on today. He better be great or...
He better be.
Or we're in trouble, man. Are we going to go, tits up? Sorry, that's a wrong thing to say. You can't say that in 2022, can you?
Yeah, tits up is probably not allowed anymore.
Okay?
I don't know.
No?
I don't know what it means. Like, I have to go Google the origin.
Have you ever seen the show The Fabulous Mrs. Maisel? The Marvelous
Mrs.
Maisel?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
What does what's-her-name say to her just before she goes on stage? Tits up.
Did you know that actress is not of Jewish faith? Did you
know? Of
course
I knew that.
Oh, I didn't.
I just
learned
show,
that.
Way. But she grew up in like Skokie, Illinois, which is near the Jews. You know
but are
I mean?
We okay with, is we okay with this? Does that, can that
with
role
what?
Be played by a Gentile?
Well, listen, on The Sopranos, every actor was, almost every actor was of Italian descent. Had to be.
Of course.
Anyway. That's because that's authentic, man. That's what we are on this show.
Forget about it.
Folks, if you're listening on the podcast right now, consider please listening live to us on our YouTube channel, where each episode is available in perpetuity. And it's interactive. If you can get here live, if you can make it for 9 a.m. Eastern time, it's a much different vibe, I guess you could say. Not that the podcast isn't great, but go to my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/Mark Hebscher. All right. We got classic Hebsy awards there. We got some great sports rants in every edition of Hebsy on Sports. Please subscribe, like the videos. It would be awesome because, the more subscribers I have, then the more our sponsor goes, oh, look, he's got, 1,000 subscribers. Isn't that fantastic? It would be great. Or 2,000 subscribers and, it's another 70 cents. It all helps. So thanks. It takes you 30 seconds, please. So
70 whole cents. Is that right, Hebsy?
All right, man. But still, it adds up. It adds up.
Brother, can you spare a dime? Can I just shout out some of the good people there then?
How please about, do, Mike. Please
multiple Gordons. Where else can you find multiple Gordons on a Friday morning? This is a Enright.
Oh, a very high Gord. Hey, listen, the Tragically Hip had a very high Gord factor.
Right.
They had a 40% Gord factor. So on this show, if we could reach a 40% Gord factor, would be great. Everybody named Gord.
I think, is Gord Stellick here, Gord Depp, all the great Gord. Gord Martineau is here. Todd Taylor, Phil Parkinson, Brian Gerstein, much love to Scott Allen, all these good people on our YouTube channel. Good morning and happy new year to you all.
And thank you all for joining us on the live stream. And if you haven't already, please hit the subscriber button now and get your friends to it. Okay, it's very important. Let's keep this show alive. So yeah, birthday tomorrow. And already, okay, people who are like, I don't have time tomorrow to wish Hebsy a happy birthday. I'm going to wish him a happy birthday today.
That's how,
because essentially the day, if your birthday falls between Christmas and New Year's,
right,
you're fucked anyway. You right. know that for this time of the year. Right. Happy, Merry Christmas. Happy. Oh yeah. Happy birthday. Right. Anyone birthday. Right. If your birthday is December 28th, 29th, I get it, man. I get it. Mine's January 1st. It's worse because people are hung over or they're about to get hammered or whatever. Happy birthday. One flows into the other one. Not that I'm complaining. The best birthday present I could get. I'm getting boosted for the vid today.
That's a big deal, man. That's a
getting
big deal.
Boosted for the vid, baby. Jab number three. Boom, boom, boom. Ali. Okay? Three jabs and pretty soon four. You know that, right? In Israel already. Jab four.
Yeah, because they got it early, right? So I guess in 6 months.
Here you go.
You know what I say? This is, I said this on the record recently. If they say, Mike, every 6 months you need a fucking booster, I'll roll up my sleeve and say,
no,
let's
it's
go,
like,
buddy.
Mike, it's like going for a teeth cleaning, right? Every 3 or 4 months, right? They call you. Time for your booster. Same. It's going to
Why don't we combine those two events? While I'm getting my teeth cleaned, just put the shot in me.
Great idea. Fantastic idea.
Thank you.
All right. Joe Siddle coming up at, how do they say it, on the bottom of the hour or whatever, but in like, Joe Siddle's coming in.
You sounded like Joe Tilly there. I thought you were going to do a Joe Tilly. Do that
I
one.
I did a Joe Tilly. We're going to get Joe on the show as well. We're going to get everybody
up.
On the show.
Coming up.
Did I tell you about the fight that Joe Tilly and I got
into? Yeah, he was a boxer.
I'll save it for the Joe Siddle.
Save it for his episode.
Okay, here's the deal. So the Toronto Raptors
playing
tonight, by the way, against the LA Clippers. Game's still on. They had 17 fans ejected from Scotiabank Arena for failing to wear their mask properly Tuesday night against Philadelphia.
Well, good.
That was their second game at home under the new reduced capacity guidelines. What were you going to say?
I said good because I've been to a couple of events and there was no Omicron like this. So it was a little different. But the two events I went to during COVID
Is that what you said?
Omicron.
The name of the virus?
We should call it.
That's
what
Scott Allen. That's what our exec producer calls
come on.
It. Oh, come on.
But they don't enforce that mask rule at all. But I think the difference is, tell me if I'm wrong. Are you allowed to drink during? No, the big difference.
No concessions, no food, no nothing. Don't you even think of taking your mask down.
Right.
Got a runny nose? Too bad. Let it run into your mask. So right away. But anyway, 17 fans were ejected. Now, this follows the first game that they had played against Golden State. Well, it wasn't Golden State. It was a bunch of guys masquerading as wearing the Golden State uniform. But and that was the first game under the new rules, guidelines. 14 fans were ejected. So the Ford government saw a trend happening here, Mike. They went, Jesus Christ, 14 people ejected. 17, what's going to, 20, 30 people in the next game? Anarchy.
Right.
So the Ford government decides this is a good enough reason to say, now that's it. Forget 20,000, forget 10,000, 1,000, maybe none. How about nobody?
Right.
Starting tonight. That's it. That's enough for the Ford government. So let's just confuse and anger everybody in the province, not just Raptor and Leaf fans, everybody in the fucking province with this book. Meanwhile, I'm looking 70,000 there in the States, 15,000 in the arena watching it. No, not here. Sorry. So this is Dr. Michael Warner, an esteemed doctor here in Toronto. I forget which hospital it is now.
Oh, Michael Gambon? Is that it? How you say it? The Michael Gambon Hospital?
His name is Dr. Michael Warner. Quote, when I see 10,000 people at a Raptors game, you know, with masks below their nose and bandanas over their face, it doesn't provide me with a lot of happiness with respect to what the government is doing or not doing to make sure Omicron doesn't spread like wildfire. End quote. Well, guess what? The government took the advice of doctors and put the kibosh on any further games with fans in the stands for at least 3 weeks. You know why? Because fans in the stands don't respect the rules. We're not used to that. You know what I mean? If we yell and scream and someone says, hey, you're making too much noise, an usher comes over, taps us on the shoulder. Right?
Right.
Here, you know how they did this, eh, Mike? Some ushers, the ushers are looking. They're part of their job now. Okay, they're cops, right?
Right.
And they got undercover as well, making sure. that the 10,000 fans or 6,900 that were at the Scotiabank Arena are adhering to the rules at all times. Okay. A buddy of mine says there was a guy in the bathroom that he thought was like an undercover cop that was watching people. Okay.
Yeah.
In the bathrooms while they're taking a leak. Can you imagine? This is what we got going here now.
Right.
This is crazy. Absolutely nuts. So do I want to go to a game? Am I going to enjoy myself at a game like this? No concessions, no food. Don't you even think of taking your mask off. And now here's the government going, oh, this is a trend that's happening here now, right? We can't allow this to happen. Why is this such a big problem? Why is it such a problem? I don't get it, Mike. Explain this to me.
Well, it's just how overwhelmingly contagious it is that it's doubling every 2 to 3 days. So I think it's all just a numbers game. So even though the vast majority, especially us fully vaxxed people, are going to be given much less severe symptoms, like it might feel like a flu or something, and then we'll recover and we'll be okay. I guess the fact that even a small percentage of people who get really sick, if that many people get it, it could theoretically overwhelm the hospitals. By the way, Michael Warner, shout out to Dr. Michael Warner. He's at Michael Guerin Hospital. I call it Gambon. It's Guerin Hospital.
Guerin. All right.
So, yeah, it's just the numbers. I think we have to wait and see where this goes, because this damn Omicron, which really only showed up a few weeks ago to ruin our times, it's just ridiculously airborne and contagious. Like, I think you and
so
I could get it
there shouldn't be
right
anybody
now.
Allowed at all. Anybody. Like, just let's get Omicron out of here.
No, I think...
Right? And then...
Get boosted and then loosen up a little bit.
Okay. I'm going out tonight. I'm going.
But where are you going? I want to find out where
my
heads
favorite
is
restaurant
going.
Right around the corner. I have to support local business. And two more businesses in my neighborhood went out of business. I can't believe they even survived this past 2 years. Incredibly, they did, but now they can't do it anymore.
What about takeout? You don't do takeout from these businesses?
I do takeout, but it's not the same at a restaurant. Like, this is fine dining, my friend. This is La Forchetta. Who do you think we're fucking around with here? This is a great restaurant.
And you enter through the kitchen, right? You
move through the kitchen. Within staggering distance. No. I tell you right now, man, they open the place up for me there, okay?
I bet. How many people in your party, Hebsy, man? How many people in your birthday party tonight?
Maybe four, and for sure two.
Well, hopefully it's not.
Not my brother and sister-in-law. No pressure if they want to make us, but it's a big decision to make. Anyway, listen.
But hopefully it's not one.
No. Anyway, so there's other people that are getting out tonight. Some Raptors hosting the Clippers tonight in front of, I don't know, a few hundred. I have no idea. New Year's Eve. Okay. Woohoo. Raptors are at home. Leafs host the Senators at 7 o'clock New Year's Day. Raptors host the Knicks Sunday at 3:30. I was supposed to go to that game, but I will not be going to that game now because of the new restrictions that only allow X number of fans into the building for at least the next 3 weeks. After that, we'll see. Mr. Forder, we'll see. We're just going to have to see. We're going to have to look at the numbers. Honestly, how can you cap the attendance at 1,000? You know they're putting at least 1,000 people into that Costco. You know there's 1,000 people in that. You know there's 1,000 people in that Costco. And they're way closer together. Over there where the sale is. You think they're keeping 6 feet apart? Not even close. Let me at that stuff. Motor oil, $3.99 for a case? Come on. Even a third or half capacity, I think, would be fine at the Scotiabank Arena. I honestly do. I'm sorry. They can do it in other places. Come on.
Quick programming question.
Instead of handing a yellow card to someone, which is what they did.
Right.
They yellow card you, that's your warning. And then if they catch you the second time, you get red carded. You get kicked out. 31 people in 2 games at the Scotiabank Arena shut it down. Come on. A third capacity. Come on.
Ebsy, quick question. Would you rather, you want to talk to the great Joe Siddle first and then dive into this World Juniors? Because I have some World Juniors questions for you. Or do you want to do World Juniors first? It's up to you. He's in the waiting room right now.
Boy, that's a good question.
It's the great Joe Siddle. Let's do Joe, and then we can.
No. Joe's got to have to wait till 9:30, man. You know, we booked him. I got 11 minutes here.
Do you know who he is?
I got it all timed out perfectly. Okay. I got it timed out perfectly.
All right.
Where was I now? Hang on a second. Wait a second. Where was I? I was ranting. Oh, that's right. I got tickets. I'm taking my son to the Raptors-Knicks game. It's Sunday afternoon. So if I got tickets, it's great. Then it's going to be half capacity. Only season ticket holders get to go. Luckily, my tickets are from a season ticket holder. Great, we're still going. But then it's like, no, there's not going to be any food. And the mask police is going to be there. And you're not going to have as much fun. And you can't take your mask off even to yell at the referee. Well, I'm going, I don't know if I want to go. My idea was to go with my son, maskless, right? Cheering, yelling, eating, drinking, all that stuff. No. So I wasn't looking forward to a shitty atmosphere with a half full arena, nothing to snack on, and the inability to clearly yell and scream at the referee, which is what I do. That's what I do. I'm a ref baiter. That's my game. So MLSE now has their work cut out for them because me and thousands of others, we're going to refund. Did you ever see the movie Breaking Away, Mike?
You know,
It's about cyclists. So you've seen it for sure, right? Academy Award winner.
I should see it.
It's all cyclist.
I'm embarrassed to tell you, Hepsi, I missed it.
Unbelievable.
Before my time, I got to catch
anyway,
up.
Anyway, in the movie, Paul Dooley is the father of the kid that's the protagonist in the movie, and he's a used car salesman, and he's a used car salesman. He's a bad guy kind of a thing. Anyway, these kids bring back a Corvette. These college kids bring back a Corvette. It doesn't start, and the kid says, I want a refund. And Paul Dooley goes, refund, refund. He goes nuts, refund, and ends up in the hospital with like a stroke. Refund, refund. Can you imagine now? Can you imagine MLSE, okay? They got a refund. How many thousands of tickets and how many more games are going to be canceled?
Right.
Where they're going to have to refund. And then there's going to be a makeup game somewhere down the road during that 3-week period. And they're going to have to reschedule those games. And then what? Go back to the fans and say, do you want to come to this game? We knew you couldn't make it to that game, but here's the,
nobody, I can tell you now, nobody's blaming MLSE for this, right? This is bigger than MLSE, right? This is a global pandemic and people are going to have to sacrifice.
What a logistical headache that is. All right. So not having played a game since December 14th in Edmonton. Remember that game? Leafs won 5-1. Remember? That's the last time we saw the Leafs play.
Oh, memories.
Six of them since then. Six games postponed due to, Leafs returned to the ice. They play Ottawa tomorrow night. And that game will be seen by a select number of lucky fans and or friends, relatives of the players. No one's really told us who gets to go to the game. Not that it's going to be a fabulous atmosphere there. There will be a nationwide TV audience dying to see what Toronto Maple Leaf hockey looks like. What number is Austin Matthews again? It's been since December the 14th, man. It's going to be weird considering what we've gone through, considering, you know, and I tell you, I'm glad I didn't go to that wedding I was invited to in Red Deer. I'm glad I took a pass on that wedding in Red Deer. How the hell do you allow, okay, the World Junior Hockey Championship? So this is done by Hockey Canada and the Edmonton Oilers put this together. How do they allow the players and staff and traveling parties of these nations, these kids, to come in contact with a bunch of yahoos in a Red Deer hotel? How did that happen?
You want me to tell you?
Okay.
It was all planned pre-Omicron. Omicron,
right.
So the planners did not see Omicron coming. Blindsided by this variant that's disrupting everything.
This is a place that they did it just fine in a bubble. You're telling me they couldn't have taken extra precautions here? Come on, it's ridiculous. International tournament. Crazy, ridiculous. Great. Okay, great tweet by our friend Adam Seaborn. After the World Junior Hockey Championship was canceled and Bell Media had to offer make goods to its sponsors, okay?
Sure.
I knew about this, but as I'm reading the tweet, I'm going, this is very interesting, and I retweeted it. The first couple of Canadian games drew, I think one of them drew like 1.8 million. The other drew like well over a million. Those numbers would have gone up during the tournament. They would have increased all the way to the gold medal game and the further Canada advanced to the tournament. So Adam explains how when a live sporting event is expected to draw over a million viewers and then is canceled, the broadcaster has to make it up to the sponsor by offering them another event that draws similar numbers. Here's the problem. Except for live sporting events, you're not going to draw over a million on any Bell Media show. You might get the odd show over
Super
a million.
Super Bowl.
Yeah, but that's a one-off. I'm not talking about a regular show. So it's like, okay, where do we find this event to do the make good for the sponsor? And then if that's the case, we can't sell that event on its own. So that money's lost forever. That's millions of dollars, man. That's bad. That's bad for Bell. It's just terrible. And the CBC, the same thing. I mean, how are you going to sell these spots when you've got a diplomatic boycott going on and sponsors, you know, aren't really going to be welcome to go and hang out with the diplomats anymore, in Beijing? It's a bad look. Bad look. Really bad look. Okay, I know, Mike, I can see the look on your face, how badly you want to talk.
I'm so distracted.
I do too. I get it too. It's a new format, all right? So joining us now, the man who analyzes the Blue Jays on Sportsnet, he's a former Major League catcher and the pride of Windsor, Ontario. Let's welcome Joe Siddle to the program. Hi, Joe.
Good morning, gentlemen. How we doing?
We're doing great. We're doing great. Mike got so excited, okay, because like baseball means spring, Joe, and spring means like, you know, it's like the pandemic will be over. Everything's going to be good. I read somewhere 85% chance that spring training starts on time this year by some expert. What do you think about that?
Some expert. Where'd you hear that from? Because I'm not sure anybody can answer that question right now.
I don't know.
Pandemic is one thing, but then there's that labor stoppage, work stoppage thing that could get in the way as well. We'll see. I mean, it's just turning over the calendar into the new year. There's still plenty of time to negotiate, but let's hope the pandemic settles down. And then more importantly, the labor part of it, which we saw became negotiations last year during a global pandemic. That wasn't pretty either.
Yeah, it's like which major league sport is in the most trouble these days, or you know who you know, I don't know. It's crazy. Hey, listen, I always thought when I first saw you, I always listened to the games on radio. But when I first saw you, I thought, man, this guy's not getting enough airtime. That behind the scenes inside baseball stuff, I love that stuff. I mean, I never played the game at a high level, but I just think that stuff with baseball that gives you the time between pitches to go over things and predict. Is something that that real fans like relish hearing that. Is there any opportunity for you to get on more than like twice during the course of a ball game for 3 minutes with Jamie Campbell?
Oh, I don't write out the show, but you know we've got the game broadcast, of course, and Jamie and I will bounce around ideas, and of course he leaves it totally to me and what I want to cover in the fourth and eighth. We like to be topical. We like to grab something that maybe happened more recently, but if it happened earlier. Wait,
it's the fourth and the eighth. I got to get this now because I never, like, yeah. I'm never aware. I'm kind of watching going, I think Joe and Jamie are coming up. It's the fifth, and, you know, I hope he talks about that play over there.
End of the fourth, middle of the eighth.
Okay, wait. I got to get this. End of the fourth, middle eighth. Got it.
That's right. Now, on occasion, that could get altered because something happens, or especially during our postseason coverage, that could change. But generally, that's what we do. End four, middle eighth.
You think you could do a half an hour of a show like that?
You know, it's interesting when you say that about going back to my radio days with Jerry. And that's probably one of the most enjoyable parts of analyzing the game for me as a former catcher is getting in the brains of that catcher behind the plate. And I say the catcher because, yes, pitchers ultimately throw the pitch. And it's ultimately up to them what they're going to throw. But a lot of it goes on behind the plate. I like to say the catchers are doing the thinking for the pitcher. And ideally, that's what you're doing because he's got enough to worry about on the mound in terms of executing the pitch you call for, but you're always thinking a pitch ahead, two pitches ahead. I came up with the Montreal Expos in the minor leagues. And as you guys know, I got a few cups of coffee at the major league level. That's one thing, but I think my grooming started very young. And when I got signed as an amateur free agent and came up through the system, I had Louis Pujols was my catching coach, but Rick Williams was our pitching coordinator in the minor leagues with the Montreal Expos. And he's, for me, the best thing that ever happened to me. But he was a pitching coordinator. How's that impact a catcher? Because you spend a lot of time with pitching coordinators on just that, on talking sequences, on talking the pitcher's strengths, hitter's weaknesses, calling a game. We called our own games. I didn't have a wristband on my wrist to look and say, what do we do with two strikes here? What are this hitter's tendencies? No, it was all right here. And you had to navigate the at-bat. You had to navigate the inning. You had to navigate the game with your pitcher. And some of the probably most important things I ever learned were in those formative years in the minor leagues, because even in instruction league, we had more formal instruction league back then in September and October after your minor league season ended. And I mean, Rick would get to a point, we'd come back, we'd play instruction league games. I'd come back to the dugout and he sat next to you and he said, why the 1-1 changeup to that second hitter? And it's like, what? I mean, and you better be able to answer his question, because if you couldn't answer his question, you were going to hear it from him. And it made me, I think, much more cognizant of every move I was making, thinking about, so if I got to 1-1 on this hitter right away, I'm going changeup. But when I say I'm going changeup 1-1, I'm thinking, okay, and if my pitcher misses down 1-1, it becomes 2-1, what am I doing? Probably going to go sinker away. If he gets the strike 1-1, then we might come back, break him ball, and try to get him to chase. And you're always thinking. And that's just, I did that for years in the minor leagues, but I have more thanks than anything to Rick Williams, because he taught me to be that way. He taught me to make sure I was away, and he held me accountable. If I didn't have an answer, whoa, I was in trouble. And that's why you just learn. So much so that we would have like an instruction league. It was like 7 days a week. Now that we did get Sundays off back then, but there were times, of course, grunt work catchers, you got to come in on a Sunday morning because he's got all his pitchers scheduled And certain guys had to throw bullpen sessions on a Sunday to stay on schedule with whatever they were working on. Rick would take us out to the local pancake house for breakfast after. That was like our treat for getting up Sunday morning at 8 o'clock to go catch bullpens. But great guy, great mentor, but more importantly, best teacher probably I ever had. And I'll mention Felipe Alou's name too, but Rick was spectacular at helping me in that part of the game.
Man, that's a fantastic testimonial.
It was.
So this all started, you're from Windsor, born and raised there, eh?
Yes, sir. Still and, here.
And still there. That's right. And, yeah, you're not, that's right. You're not, you haven't moved to Toronto or anything like that. So we can't lure you to come to the big city, but, you know, I know a lot of people in Windsor spent a lot of time there as well. Tunnel Barbecue. My father was a salesman. He would come on Sunday nights after selling all week. He would come back. He would stop at the Tunnel Barbecue for like short ends cut and like apple pie, and then eat half of it on the way back, driving back to Toronto on like Sunday nights. But I know that there's no way you can get around the fact that Detroit's right there, of course. And naturally you're going to be influenced by the Detroit teams. So who were your heroes growing up, and what made you want to become a baseball player?
I played baseball from a very young age. Like, I'm going back to when we played in the park. We have a local park in my neighborhood here.
Was your dad a ball player?
Not really. I was the youngest of nine children. My parents had seven children. And then there was an eight-year gap before my brother arrived. And then, of course, he needed a playmate, so I arrived. So the two of us, my brother Jim's 2 years older than me, so we're kind of together. But then there's a big gap. So didn't really grow up in a house of nine kids, as it may sound. But yeah, youngest of nine. So I think by the time my parents, you know, by the time my brother Jim and I got to high school, my parents were a little bit older. And there was an ongoing joke with some of my buddies at school. Like, my parents were friends with a couple of my buddies' grandparents. So the joke was on Friday night, hey, what are your parents doing tonight? Going out for, you know, going to have some fun with my grandparents, you know, that kind of thing. So I was very young. So I don't want to say that they weren't too involved in my youth sports, but they let me go. And if it was at the park playing home run derby, it was that. If it was road hockey, it was that. If it was football in the field, it was that. So support, yes, but not that hands-on. I mean, I coached a lot of my kids' teams. They didn't do that. My dad was a meter technician with Windsor Utilities. My mother sold Tupperware. So they were pretty, they worked a lot. Worked a lot of after hours. And so they didn't have time to get to our games a whole lot. Right. So I was pretty well on my own in terms of that. But yeah, I think it's when I say I'm the youngest of nine, people, oh my God, what a house that was like to grow up in. But by the time I got to high school, there were only myself and my brother and maybe one or two others, and they were slowly heading off too.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, my girlfriend is the youngest of nine as well, and her niece is older than her.
Yes.
Right? Her oldest sister's daughter is older than her. And so, yeah, that kind of thing. And also they were left to their own devices. They grew up in Pembroke, Ontario. It was like, listen, there's nine kids. Like, go off and do your thing. I don't have time to be looking after you. We got a restaurant to run and all that type of thing. So, yeah, you know, big families, like, go figure out a way. Figure it out.
I'm guessing when my parents dealt with the first seven, they were about done.
Yeah, I figure the same thing. First baseball game you ever went to, where was it? Tiger Stadium?
Tiger Stadium, 100%. Yeah, I had a couple older brothers who would take us to Tiger games all the time. And, I mean, literally back then, of course, the border's fine. It's 15, 20 minutes to Tiger Stadium from our house. Man. 5 or 10 minutes to the border and then 5 minutes over the border. So yeah, we were very fortunate in that regard. I still remember getting my transistor radio taken away from me in grade eight from Miss Lodge because I was listening to the home opener in the classroom. I got caught and she took it. I still, I'm not sure where she is today, if she's even still alive, but man, I was upset about that one. But we snuck out of class several occasions to go to the home opener that they would bring us to. So yeah, great memories of Tiger Stadium. And it is, I think it's geographically proximity. Yeah, we were Detroit fans. We were Red Wing fans. Now, the one thing that was different then, too, is with hockey, it was a little different because the Leafs were Hockey Night in Canada. They were on TV a lot more, as you know. Right. Whereas we had, I think it was Channel 50 here where we got
Red Channel Wing 50, games. Yeah.
Yeah, remember UPN 50? It was turned, and it was Channel 4 first, WDIV. But then, so we got the Detroit sports, but not near as much. So we were probably exposed more to Toronto Maple Leafs hockey here in Canada, but by far way more Detroit Tigers baseball.
Like Tiger Stadium was a great spot. I mean, I can still smell Tiger Stadium. Yes. That mix of urine and beer and cigar smoke from, you know,
Ballpark Franks.
Yeah, Ballpark Franks. And also, too, the beer. I didn't like the beer there, but across the street, I think it was called the Dugout, you could get a cold beer and then go back into the stadium. They'd let you back in. And so
you figured.
Yeah, we figured that out. It was a great spot to go to. And you had the most confused fans because they liked the Jays because, you know, they were a coming of age in the early 80s. But of course, you know, you're from that area. So there's, you know, you had that mix of Tiger fans, some Jays fans, some Cleveland Indians fans from the London area that would watch the games off the Cleveland stations. It was pretty, it was a pretty interesting mix. I have to ask you about this. And I ask almost every athlete or performer I talk to if they remember their first, when they first realized, man, I've made it. So like your first major league game, which I'm sure was your dream, where was that game? What were the circumstances surrounding you getting in major league uniform for the first time?
Well, let's start with how I found out. I was playing AAA Ottawa at the time. My manager was Mike. Ottawa Lynx, absolutely. 1993, and my manager was Mike Quadi, if you remember that name, managing the big leagues briefly, I think, with the Cubs.
Yeah.
So he was our manager, and Q had me in the minor leagues for a few years, so a lot of us had played for him lots, and he had that that reputation. We called it a mood ring. Like, he could be higher than a kite one minute, and the next minute, he's ready to pound you on about something. So he bounced back and forth. You had to watch your steps around Q. And I wasn't even playing at the time. I was kind of like the backup catcher in Ottawa. In fact, the night I got called up, I'm in the bullpen all night. So I'm in the bullpen, not even playing, catching in the bullpen. I think we lost an extra inning game. So we go in the clubhouse in Ottawa. And if you've ever been a very large clubhouse, it was great the way they housed us there. My locker is, you come in the clubhouse from the field, the tunnel from the field. My locker is like over there to the left. So I go to my locker, and it's a pretty quiet clubhouse when you lose a game late like that. Mm-hmm. He comes in after, so he had to cross all the way through the player's clubhouse to get to his office. Well, as he's coming through, he's got this scowl on his face, and he looked right at me, and he went like this. And I'm thinking, what did I do? I didn't play. Would I do something wrong in the bullpen, warming up a pitcher or something? Like, what could he possibly be angry with right now? So I slowly walk over. I'm thinking, what could this be? Go into his office, and then right behind me is Gil Heredia, if you remember that name, former big league pitcher. Yeah. So Gil and I are in the office, and now I'm thinking to myself, okay, I've been around a little bit. Gil's been around a little bit. Maybe he's upset about something and wants to talk to the two of us to address with the team. You know, I'm just thinking, what can be wrong here? He lost a tough game. Oh, well. And he sat back, and he put his feet up on the desk, and he said, you guys are going to the big leagues. And it was my first big league call-up, right? And I think I looked at him, and I honestly said, like, yeah, right. Like, what's this about almost? And he kind of raised his eyebrows. He said, seriously. And, my body just started tingling, I think, because so A, you play all your career for this moment, but B, it's different if you're playing every day and you're doing well and, hey, maybe something happened, you're going to call in. Yeah, but I wasn't even playing. I think, I was kind of the backup, but at that time, this is 1993. In 1990, Felipe Alou is my manager in West Palm Beach in the Florida State League. So that could have been the best thing that ever happened to me too, because I caught a lot of games that year and Felipe loved me behind the plate. He always said he was like having a coach back there, and saw a lot of the things that I discussed earlier with Rick Williams. That's why Felipe loved me behind the plate. So that made a great impression on Felipe. Well, he's now the Montreal Expos manager, and he apparently wanted like a third catcher. And I was kind of a third catcher. I didn't hit much. Defense was my thing, but, you know, coming late, National League game, got a pinch run for Darren Fletcher, burn a base runner, put me in catch. So the timing was impeccable. So no sooner do I go out, I tell my wife, we're going to flip in Pittsburgh in the morning. It's unbelievable. So we get an early flight to Pittsburgh. I make my major league debut, I think, the next day. And when I got there, you know, guys, of course, I had been in big league camp, so I knew a lot of the players, of course. And they said, like, be ready. Felipe, when he calls somebody up, he usually likes to use them early, whether it's to break the ice or get you in, whatever the case. And so I think it was the next day, but I'm in the bullpen. I get thrown into, it was probably a double switch, but I got thrown into catch in a tie game in the ninth, I think it was. We ended up losing the game, unfortunately. Tim Scott was on the mound. I think Jeff Shaw before that. But that's what I remember is, first of all, the call-up and all, but then I get there. And I mean, he didn't wait to throw me in a 9-1 game. It was like, so he trusted me. He knew me. He trusted me. He knew that I could do the job behind the plate. And I was comfortable there. That was my strength. You know, when you feel like you're really good at something, then you feel comfortable, obviously. So different story in the batter's box, but it felt good behind the plate. And that's the reason why I got four tastes of major league action, right? Is because that's what I could do back there. I felt I could catch with anyone in the league. So that's the way it was with Montreal, and especially with Felipe, because he knew that he could use me late in games and feel comfortable.
Okay, so I'm looking at your record, and I'm going, okay, Joe Siddall, all right. You know, the term cup of coffee is a great term. nowadays, especially with COVID, there are players who would have never had a chance to make it into pro sports that are playing as replacement players for the guys that are in COVID. I'm looking at rosters of NFL teams. These guys had no chance of making the NFL. Now they're NBA, especially. Some of these guys that are being signed for 10, 15 days are like calling their families going, I made it to the NBA. They were second stringers in the G League. And so this whole idea where someone who's never done that before looks and says, oh, that's nice, you had a cup of coffee. But from your standpoint, when you say cup of coffee, it's, you know, you're being self-deprecating. I get that at all. But like you reached a point where very few people have ever done it before. And so when you look back at it, you say like that, if I can accomplish that with my limited skills, quote unquote, what else can I do? Because I think that made you a great broadcaster without you even knowing it. You just had those communicative skills in baseball, which translated really well to telling an audience, you know, what you're thinking. I read a story where you predicted every pitch. Some guy, you were in a bar with some guy somewhere. I forget. I read this. And he's sitting with Joe Siddle. And every pitch, you're going fastball high and away. And you predicted, and every play. He said it was crazy, absolutely crazy. So
yeah, a few things there, Hebsy. So I think, yeah, self-deprecating. I understand. I made it to the pinnacle, the highest level of sports. Awesome. And I, the reason I think I speak the way I do sometimes is I speak from a Major League Baseball player's perspective, not from, say, a fan listening. So a fan listening is like, oh my God, this guy played in the major leagues. But from a Major League Baseball player's perspective, I was talking to some of the buddies that I used to play with. Some guys played for 10 years in the big leagues. That's quite a career or more, right? Or 6 years or 8 years or 12 years. But those are great major league careers. So I didn't have that. So I guess that's probably why I kind of bring it down a notch and say I got like four cups of coffee. But yeah, I totally get it. It's been fantastic. Interesting you used two words that I just cringed when you said it. Replacement players. Now, we are in a work stoppage right now. And I was a big part of that in 1994. I was in Lake Worth, Florida, which Florida, West Palm Beach was the spring training home of the Expos. The minor league camp was in Lake Worth. I'm in big league camp. The strike hits, of course, so spring training's on hold. We're down in minor league camp. I was not on the 40-man roster, so I'm down at minor league camp. Well, that's when, if you recall, they had us, and they were asking minor league players to be replacement players. And I'll never forget being in that minor league hotel, and the big boys came over to speak to us, you know, all the big league guys. So it's Tom Glavine and Bobby Bonilla and John Franco, and they're up. I remember being livid because here I am, Joe Minor Leaguer, and trying to do whatever you can to get to the big leagues, make some money, make a career of it. And these guys who are making millions are basically telling you what to do and not to go. And I remember being angry at them. But then you step back and now you peer into the future. Because remember in spring when they asked us to be replacement players, they were baiting you with some money. I think it was like $5,000 to sign, $5,000 if you made the team. And they actually had guys working out. And I remember there were a bunch of us, we were like, what do we do here? It's like, I don't really want to do that. A, in my head, I was like, this isn't the major leagues. These are replacement players, right? The players, the major league players are out right now. So I knew it wasn't going to be really major league baseball, but the teams put a lot of heat on you. And we were in minor league camp at Lake Worth. It was Santa Lucia's high school. And that's where our fields were in the back where minor league camp was. And once again, I mentioned Felipe Alou's name. A couple of us, I went to speak with Felipe and I said, Skip, like, what do you suggest here? Like, they want us to play. They're making us play in this. And I'll never forget Felipe's reaction. And again, to this day, I respect him more than anything because he looked at me honestly and he said, you got to remember something. You know, the way he spoke, it was fantastic. He said, this shit's not going to last forever. In other words, this is temporary. Once things get ironed out, you want to be a Major League Baseball player. And he said, this isn't Major League Baseball. And I can't thank him enough for that because it helped me. I mean, I don't think I was going to do it anyway, but it helped me. It confirmed my belief that, yeah, this is ridiculous what they're trying to do. It's posturing. They're just trying. So I didn't do it. And it was great. But that was that year. It was a horrible situation for minor leaguers to be in. It was easy if you're on the 40, man, because you're not going to break the union. But then now you fast forward, and I think of when I did get those, quote, cups of coffee and what my minimum salary might have been and the service time I was able to accrue and pension. And it's not a lot when you don't play for a lot of the big leagues, but all of those things that I was angry at those guys up at the podium talking about, I actually benefited. Now I understand when I, you know, we talk the economics of the game and I understand why they're fighting for what they fight, whether you agree or disagree with the owner side or the player side, I have a better understanding because of what happened back then in 1994 right. During that strike.
So tell me about this. If there if there's still a COVID issue when the players and owners come to an agreement, which I expect they will at some particular point, how difficult is it going to be for the Blue Jays to sign a free agent when they're aware of the situation here in Canada when it comes to crossing the border, getting tested? I mean, all that. Is that going to be a deterrent?
That's a really good question, especially the way things are right now. I heard you earlier talking about the capacity and limits for the hockey games and basketball games. Let's hope we're in a better place, but you know, in another month or two. But yeah, that can be very interesting. I don't know that, you know, we talked about player, you know, last year was about being vaccinated or not and players coming in and who they could have and visiting players. But I don't know that that's going to get to that point. We don't know what's going to happen in the world, but I'm sure it can impact them. But I think I would say that their heavy lifting's been done. Are they done? Absolutely not. I think the calendar is just turning over and there's still lots that's going to happen. If this work stoppage ended mid-January, I'm sure lots going to happen. But then like what you just said, do the Blue Jays have, I don't know how they attack that. That's a good question, Hats. I'm not the GM. I don't know how they consider, because you can't predict the future. Whatever it is, January 15th or January 30th might be different by opening day. So do you just sign guys or are guys hesitant because of what might happen in Canada? I don't know the answer to that.
And the hassle before any problems was, you know, just going to Canada and that kind of thing. Now you're going to add another layer or two, three layers of security or testing or whatever. I don't know. So my thing is this. Now you got to make a trade. If you don't think you can attract free agents, this is the year. I mean, this is the year, Joe. So, and I'm looking at this, I'm saying, okay, Vladdy at first, Biggio and Espy at second, Bo at short, Jose Ramirez at third, but you're going to have to give something up, or Matt Chapman, you're going to have to give up something pretty big, but you got a deep farm system there. You got Kirk, you got Groshans, you got Biggio, you got Gurriel on the major league roster. You got some options there. You got Gurriel in left, you got Springer in center, Teoscar in right, you got Grichuk, you can DH, Jansen, McGuire, Kirk, Moreno. Oh, man, you got starting staff of Ryu, Berrios, Manoa, Gausman now, and then Stripling, maybe Nate Pearson. Pretty solid bullpen. Joe, this has got to be the year. I mean, what do you do at third base?
I love the name you mentioned, if it can happen, and I don't care
left-handed
what it costs.
Hitter. Oh.
I don't care what it costs either, because that, to me, is a game changer. It's the one, I think, thing that they're lacking, and we saw what happened at third base last year, but more importantly, that left-handed bat. And I know people don't necessarily talk like they need that balance. It's about the style of hitters. I get all that. Give me that switch hitter. Oh, my gosh. I don't know.
The problem is
switch hitter. The tough part about Jose Ramirez, of course, is it's pretty friendly contract, right? He's not.
And he's two more years.
Two more years. But the point being, there could be a lot of teams in on that one, right? But, yeah, what I love about what's happened with the Blue Jays. If we were to backtrack, say, 3, 4, 5 years, and we saw all this happening, we were talking probably in the media about 2021, yeah, but by 22 and 23, it's go time, right? Like this, now it's time to win. And look what's happened. It's kind of exactly the way it played out. Last year's disappointment, if you want to call it that, but last year's experience, I'm going to call it, I think is going to pay huge dividends moving forward for Bo, for Vladdy, who to me are the cornerstones of this organization. So that's going to help. But now what they did to acquire Berrios by finally giving up some prospects, right? They were hoarding those prospects. They were building that minor league depth. They weren't giving anything up. It was always that signing, a waiver, all this. And now they finally gave up some, quote, bodies that were like, whoa, look what they gave up to get him. It's about time. That was time to do that. And I think it's time still to keep doing it. And that's why we've heard Mark Shapiro talk for a handful of years now about building depth. And that's why you got to build depth. You can't have 6 or 8 big prospects in the minor leagues. You need 10 and 15 and 20 and 30. Just keep going. And that's why player development is so critical. And yes, that's what they said they've done. And I told you a million times, I'll say it again, Hemsley, I will take the guy that I know what I'm getting as opposed to the unknown any day of the week. That's what they got in Berrios. They've got the known. You know what he's going to be. He's done it. He's got a track record. He's done it for years. Yeah. So when you bring in a Jose Ramirez, and I still like the switch hitter, and I'll go back to my catching perspective again. I like to break that up in the lineup because calling the game, if I'm facing Springer and Vladdy, and then all of a sudden Jose Ramirez comes in that left-handed bat instead of the righties that the Blue Jays keep throwing out there, you can get it. Now, every hitter is different, so you approach them a little bit differently, but you can get into a nice little groove with your pitcher. But now all of a sudden you throw not just a lefty, but a guy with the quality of Ramirez's bat. Now it's like, okay, we're going to come in on him. That's four seam side of the plate for my right-hand pitcher Barrios, right? Or Manoa. But, or are we going to sink it away? What about the change? It just changes your mentality a little bit of how you're going to call the game with the pitcher. And it changes what the pitcher's doing. It's a good thing to mix the lineup up. I know some people say, oh, if they have all righties and they're all good hitters, that's okay. Well, they are okay, but not when you have some guys that, you know, the Teoscars and the Grichiks and the Bo, these guys will chase a little bit. They'll expand somewhat similar in a lot of regards. Now, we know these are, this turned into a really good lineup, and especially the top half of this Blue Jays lineup is awesome. But, oh, man, when I heard that name, Michael Brantley, last winter around this time, I was
Where did that come from? I mean, I know everyone on social media, especially, it's like, get it first. And then 2 minutes later, nobody remembers who got the scoop. But what is this obsession with trying to be the one that, I mean, the Michael Brantley thing, I went crazy when I, Springer and Brantley, what are you kidding me? Are you nuts? I mean, that we're a championship team now. And then to find out that, no, I was wrong or misunderstood or whatever. I don't like this. It used to be that a general manager or whoever was inside would go on the record to tell a reporter, and that reporter was a credible reporter and would report it out, and everyone would go, okay, it's true. But to not get something from the horse's mouth and to spread that through, I mean, Michael Brant, when I watched him play in the playoffs, man, I'm going, that's what we needed, that left-handed bat.
Yeah.
I was so excited. So what is it about some of this information that's being transmitted out there in sports, in baseball especially here, that's incorrect, that's unfounded?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it either. And I, you know, in my role, I'm not a reporter, and I know reporters have jobs to do. I could, you know, I've got connections. I've got people I know in the game. I could be.
So why don't you set the record straight then sometimes?
Well, I didn't know the answer to that, but I don't want to get in the business of that. And like, to me, my job's analyzing baseball, and that's what I enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. I don't care to be the first to report that the Tigers are signing Eduardo Rodriguez. I don't care. Like, yeah, I have no desire to be that or do. I'd be on my phone 24/7. I don't want to be on my phone 24/7. I just want to be on my phone or where I am when I'm doing things like this, or if I, you know, we do enough, especially during the baseball season that we're on. I'm reading stuff all the time, so I'm trying to stay up on everything, and I'm trying to analyze somebody's swing because I'm doing a demo tonight. All that going on. The last thing I need to be doing is reporting news. Like, there are people to report news. I'm going to let them report. But yeah, I because I'm not a reporter, I cringe the same way you do when I see first to report. Or even in the offseason, some of these signings. Ken Rosenthal first to report. And I know there are some great ones in the game, but I guess that's their way of doing their job really well. Yeah, I'm not a reporter, so I don't know.
Do you think that it will ever be the way it was with broadcasters, where they're going on the road, doing the games? Because you guys, I mean, Dan Schulman, you guys, everyone sounds as good as they did when they were at the ballpark. I'm talking about the play-by-play guys, the color men who are sitting in a booth somewhere, you know, not near the game. You guys, when you're doing it out of a studio versus being in the ballpark for the home games, do you think it's ever going to go back that way? Because last year, if I'm not mistaken, nobody traveled, radio or TV, like nobody went to the games.
I sure hope it changes, but I'm sure our pandemic world's going to be the answer to that one, whether it happens this year or in the future. But yeah, can you do it? Absolutely. You've seen it. We've done it, but it's so hard. And I don't think our audience understands how hard it is.
It must be incredibly hard.
I mean, if you're Dan or Buck calling the player, if you're Ben Wagner on radio, and I know this from spending 4 years with Jerry, I mean, listen to Jerry as the flags blow left to right above the right center field bleachers. Descriptive, right? I mean, he brings you to the ballpark through the radio waves. And you can't do that because you're on a monitor, you see the game, you have other monitors showing things, but you can't get too descriptive because you're not there and you can't see things. In my role, it makes it difficult because sure, we can watch the play and analyze the play, but sometimes it's that, again, the game within the game that I love to bring to the audience. And it might be, you know, when I'm at the game, I might be perched up there and I see the guy in the on deck circle and he's got this funky little funny warm-up swing in the on-deck circle. And a lot of people, if you're at the game or you see that, you wonder, why is he doing that? Well, I would love to bring that to the audience to say hitters oftentimes will do things that they think is making their bat path do what it wants to do. But sometimes with your body, it looks unorthodox. You'll see some guys got some funky routines in the on-deck circle. you can't do that if you're not in the ballpark because I can't see the on deck circle on a monitor. So, I mean, those are the cool things, or maybe it's the positioning of fielders. And we do have talkback buttons where we can try to get views, but sometimes you get the other team's feed. So very challenging. And I don't think our audience understands, unfortunately, how it affects us. Because can you do it? Absolutely. Can you bring the game to the audience? Absolutely. But so different being there in person. So different.
I'm here to tell you right now that you and all the other guys and gals that are doing these games remotely make it sound so good that, and I hate, it's unfortunate that your bosses are going to go, what are we sending them on the road for? They sound so good. They can call it so well off a monitor. And I went, go back to the story of one of the great soccer announcers, Andres Cantor, famous goal, that guy there. Yes. For years, I watched the games and I thought, this guy's he's there. He's in Madrid. He's in Barcelona. And I found out later, much to my chagrin, that he sat in a studio in Miami, Univision, all those times for all those great games and called the game off a monitor by himself. He did such a good job. They said, why bother sending him? And I hate to say it. The unfortunate thing is some broadcasters are so good that they can take an event and make it seem as if they're there and describing it to you. And that's kind of the way it's become. Joe, can we get you on every so often, once baseball season starts? Because the way you're talking about it now, 2 months before spring training, like, we're all excited now. I can't wait to see Jose Ramirez in a Blue Jay uniform after hearing all this stuff. But we'd love to have you on again. It was great talking to you. It was a real pleasure.
Hey, my pleasure, guys, and happy birthday tomorrow, Hezzy.
Hey, thanks a lot. Happy New Year to you. Are you going to spring training this year? If all goes well, are you planning on?
I'll be there in March, baseball.
Me too.
Or not, so.
March.
Good.
I'm there March 7th to the 18th. I got tickets to 4 games already.
I hope you're at those games.
Fingers crossed, buddy. Thanks, Joe.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. Cheers. That's Joe Siddle, Blue Jay broadcaster. Jamie Campbell's number 2 man, I guess. I could say that about Jamie, you know. I should have asked him about what it's like working with Jamie. Jamie looks like a tough guy to work with.
You think so? I think he's
he's rough looking, isn't he, Jay?
No, I know you're joking. I think those two are very, very good together because, you just heard Joe. Like, that guy's a pro. He's a good communicator and he knows the game. He's the best. But Jamie Campbell is just a true fan. Like, this guy, you know, as a kid is at Exhibition Stadium and soaking it in and loving every minute of it. And you can tell I have all the time in the world for those two gentlemen.
Yeah, it's good. And so Joe explained, so they're on every Blue Jays broadcast. Of course, they're on the pregame show. They're on for a fair bit there. But once the game is on, they're on at the end of the 4th inning, and they're on in the middle of the 8th inning.
Right.
So those are the two places where they insert them. And I guess they're on for about 2.5-3 minutes. I think that's the max between innings that you can kind of get in there without commercials.
I laughed. Right. So I'm listening to you chat with Joe, and it's great. And then he mentions the players in 94 who came up to him, the pros. And he mentions Bobby Bonilla. And I'm thinking, because he goes, oh, they're making millions of dollars. And I'm thinking, that guy's still making millions of dollars. Like, he's literally still on the Mets payroll making over $1 million a year.
That's right. Bobby Bonilla Day every year because he had, I think 25 years.
And it's, I know it's coming to an end soon, but it's still active. And it's unbelievable when you think we're talking about 1994 and that guy's still making a
I know, I know. Oh, God, I'm so looking forward to baseball now. And that's another thing.
The labor thing, though. Will there be a spring training? Usually this stuff goes right out.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. I mean, I just, you know, if it gets delayed, that would be too bad. But as long as they start the season on time, I guess that's what it comes down to.
Am I right? Correct me if I'm wrong, but in the history of, because this is a lockout, not a strike. So
correct.
In the history of
a game lost to a lockout.
That's what I was going. I don't believe lockouts ever result in missed games.
Never.
It's the strikes.
You'll get someone to tell you there's always a first time. Okay. John Madden.
Right.
Last Sunday on the NFL broadcast on CBS, they did a whole feature on John Madden. The John Madden years. It was a fantastic, like a documentary, man.
Right.
It was really good. And then, like, this week, he died. Suddenly, that interview and all that stuff they did on CBS was from July. 85 years old, John Madden passed away. So John Madden is, to the younger generation, like my kids are in their 20s, John Madden is like Tim Horton is. He's known for, like, the video games.
Of course.
Madden 94, Madden 95, you know what I mean?
Yep.
The way Tim Horton is known for donuts and coffee. Uh-huh. And that's the odd part of it is that, no, John Madden was a great coach. and an even better broadcaster.
The best color, the best analyst I've ever seen do NFL games.
Sport.
Yeah.
In any sport. He started the Telestrator. He was the one who said, you know, look here, and with the circles on the screen and all that stuff. But more than that, one of the best lines about John Madden. John Madden, an icon with a mic on. So I got John Madden's phone number in, I'm going to say this was 1979 or 80. John Madden's phone number from Bill King. He was the, not our friend Bill King.
Okay, a different Bill King.
Bill King was the iconic play-by-play voice of the A's, okay, the Raiders, and the Warriors in San Francisco and Oakland in the Bay Area. Right. So he gives me his number. I said, you know, I'd love to get in touch with John Madden. I know he retired from coaching. Like, this is 1980.
Right.
I heard he retired from coaching. I'd love to get him on my radio show because I had a sports talk show. So it's a 415 area code, San Francisco Bay Area. I dial the number. John gets on, and I say, John, here's my Mark Hepshire, Bill King gave me your number. Would love to have you on. Talk, you know, the football, the game's coming up, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, here's the deal. It would have been later than that. I was doing a radio show on 590. Madden agreed to come on and talk about the playoff games that year, 81. He wasn't doing the playoff game. He was doing the Super Bowl for CBS. The Super Bowl was in Pontiac, Michigan in January of 82. So this would have been around that time. Anyway, Madden's not doing the Dallas-San Francisco NFC game. It's the Dwight Clark game. He's traveling to Pontiac, Michigan to do the Super Bowl.
Right.
I didn't know at the time that he wouldn't fly. He hated it. So I didn't know, like, he's taking the week off. Yeah, he was taking a train to get out to, you know, from the West Coast to Detroit. So he misses that game. He doesn't even do that game.
Wow.
Where Dwight, you know, Joe Montana throws
the catch. We call that the catch.
The catch.
Yeah.
A couple of days later, he's on. Before that, he gives us the preview, and he picks San Francisco to beat Dallas.
Yeah.
And he picks Cincinnati also to win, and they're going to go in the Super Bowl. So he comes on a couple of weeks in a row. He's giving us predictions. He's really good. Mm-hmm. He's very, but it's this radio. So we had him on. I guess I had him on 4 or 5 times during that season. Excellent. Didn't have him on after that. He got super busy, and then before you knew it, he's writing a book. And actually, that's the last time I had him on, is when he wrote his first book called "Hey, Wait a Minute," which, if you remember from the Miller Lite commercials, he right. Wait a minute. That was right. Sort of the John Madden shtick. Anyway, poor guy.
Wait, did you misspeak when you said 590? You meant 1430, right?
No, 590.
Okay, I want to clarify because people listening think you mean CJCL, but you mean 590.
No, it was CKEY at the time. I had good. An evening talk show. It was the only talk show in town. I blew away the competition, Earl McRae on CJCL, knocked him off.
Right.
And I had the only show in town for like a couple of years. Every night from 6:05 till 8 p.m. on CKEY 590. So that was a news talk station.
Right.
We also had the rights to NFL games. That's how I actually got Madden to come on, because I'm like, hey, we do the NFL games. And he did the occasional radio at first. But anyway, he was fabulous, man.
Of course.
Fantastic. Great storyteller. Wonderful guy. Never met him in person. Had him on the radio 5-6 times, whatever.
Well, he wouldn't fly up to see you.
That's right. And we were never. But anyway, you know,
rest great.
In peace.
I will say, you're absolutely right. Because I think that's the most lucrative video game franchise, one of the most lucrative video game franchises of all time. And you're right. Kids today know Madden from the NFL video game, of course.
Right.
And you're right. On my vintage, and of course your vintage, but like, I will say, when Pat Summerall and when they were calling like a game on an NFL game in the 90s, to me, that was the cream of the crop. That was the game. Like, usually it was a Troy Aikman, Dallas Cowboys game or something with Emmitt Smith and that great team, Michael Irvin and all that. But I just loved it. John Madden and Pat Summerall was the best.
It was a perfect pairing because Pat Summerall was a minimalist play-by-play announcer.
Right.
Aikman, Irvin,
right.
Touchdown.
Right.
Boom. Wow. Quick, done, out of the way for Madden to go, look at this. Okay. So it was a beautiful, perfect pairing. They were together for many, many years, too, on CBS and then, of course, on Fox.
Right.
Anyway, rest in peace, John Madden. In the NFL this weekend, the Buffalo Bills, who are in first place in the NFC, the AFC East, thanks to their win last week, hello, they host the Atlanta Falcons. New England is at home to Jacksonville. Big game on the weekend, Arizona, 10-5 against Dallas, 11-4, the Cowboys. College football starts this morning at 11. Rutgers, Wake Forest in the Gator Bowl. Hmm. Number one Alabama takes on number four Cincinnati in the Cotton Bowl at 3:30. That's the first of two semifinals for the CFP, the college football title. And then number two Michigan against number three Georgia. in the Orange Bowl tonight, New Year's Eve.
Are those TSN games?
Are they what?
TSN games.
Like, I don't know.
I'm just saying, we were talking before our great guest joined us, Joe. We were talking about make goods and you need, you know, and I'm just saying, would those games, if they're on TSN, do they draw over a million people?
No, not even close. No. Drawing a million is tough. Trust me.
I'm just asking. Drawing a million is tough.
That's not easy. Your Leaf games will be a million on the weekends, probably close to it. Around there.
But in the absence of junior games, which would have been on, I'm just curious whether eyeballs flock to these bowl games, these NCAA bowl games.
No, they don't. Eyeballs do not flock.
Because they are, but for the record, they are all TSN games. They have the rights to the...
They got the rights to college football, and I'll have a bunch of them on. All right, before we go, golf, the best sport of them all, because it's pretty much, well, except in Ontario last year, pandemic-free. Like, it really... It's a good spot to be. Golf popularity picked up during the pandemic, and nearly 2 years later, the sport is still swinging for the stars. In 2020, golf had its biggest net increase since 1997, 60 million plus rounds, with 3 million people taking up the course, sport of golf for the first time. 3 million new golfers in 2020. Total number of rounds played in the U.S. this year will surpass the number of rounds played in 2020 by 5%. The PGA Tour's purse jumped nearly 14%. For each event, that's $427 million in purses. The LPGA's purse jumped 12% to almost $86 million. $86 million for the women, $427 million for the men. Who's the newest developer of golf carts, Mike?
Tesla.
Lamborghini, my friend. Lamborghini announced the development of golf carts in October. Yeah, grab me a Lambo and let's play 18. According to Forbes, the online PGA Superstore has seen business increase by roughly 70% over the last 2 years.
You know, it's a rich man's game, right? This is
not anymore. Not anymore. Sure? That's just it.
Feel like
hockey is a rich man's game.
I see a bunch of blue collar schlubs though playing shinny at the local rink, and I don't see the blue collar schlubs doing 18 holes at the.
You've never been out to a golf course in your life, Mike. So don't even. You've never been to Bushwood before, so don't tell me about blue-collar schlubs playing golf.
Shout out to the blue-collar schlubs. I really would love to be one.
Lots of them for $30 a round, $35 a round.
Okay, if you say so. Okay.
Yeah, that's not a rich man's sport. Don't give me that nonsense. And listen, even seeing Tiger Woods play with his 12-year-old son boosted the TV ratings so dramatically, so considerably, that people are hollishing to see more golf. When you watch golf,
spell that.
You have no idea there's a pandemic going on. It's a nice escape, if you ask me. All right, a reminder, my book, The Greatest Athlete You've Never Heard Of. Yeah, that's the book. It makes a great gift or a terrific read if you're into a good story about Canada's Olympic gold medalist, first Olympic gold medalist, George Orton, who everyone thought was an American. Why did they think that? Read the book. He came up with the idea of numbering football jerseys in 1914. Did you realize before that was like, no numbers? Who is that guy? I don't know. Looks like someone, so-and-so. Put a number on him. That was George Orton's idea. He was the father of hockey in Philadelphia, introduced it to the city of Philadelphia. And he started Penn, University of Pennsylvania, and turned the Penn Relays into a world-class track meet. Spoke 9 languages. Quite the man, George Orton. Get the book for just $8.79 from Amazon or Kobo. Get the paperback edition for $21.22 from Amazon or at your local bookstore if you can get in. And for $35, I will get you a personally inscribed copy of my book, and I'll ship it for free. If you prefer audiobooks, and really, who has the attention span to read these days? I narrated my own audiobook, Mike. I did.
We should have 2 versions, one read by you, and then Toronto Mike reads the other version.
That's not a bad idea. Anyway, go to audible.com. It's audibletrial.com/Hebsy. audibletrial.com/Hebsy. And you can listen to the book for free, a free trial. audibletrial.com/Hebsy. Go there now. And if you like the podcast, buying this book or just getting a free copy of it online from audibletrial.com/Hebsy is a great way to support the show. Thank you. We appreciate it very, very much. And that's it for episode number 265 of Hebsy on Sports. Thanks to Toronto Mike for production and inspiration. As always, hit him up at Toronto Mike. Listen to his excellent podcast. He's got great guests.
If I may promote something really, 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 really quickly, is I have the very first public appearance by Kim Clark Champness since he lost his ability to speak with throat cancer. And we chat, he uses a voice box now, and this conversation, which drops on the Toronto Mic'd feed on Monday morning, that's the 3rd of January 2022, is something special. I just wanted to let people know to be ready.
Nice. Much music. KCC, one of the best, man. Interested in hearing that conversation. Thank you to our guest today, Joe Siddle, for joining us and talking baseball. We're going to have Joe back because he's awesome, man.
He's excellent.
And he doesn't get enough airtime. He's on like at the end of the fourth inning in the middle of the eighth with Jamie Campbell. Come
hey,
on.
How long did it take you to do your audiobook? Quick question from your YouTube channel.
I read it all in one sitting. Took me 45 minutes.
So no, thank you.
I don't know.
I thought that was serious. Okay, a couple of days.
It's hard to read an audiobook in a little booth to nobody.
Hey, who's your guest next week? Do you want to promote it now? I'm just curious.
I was just going to say, buddy. Have a happy new year. Thanks for allowing us into your headspace. And next week's exciting episode features Emmy Award winner Adnan Virk of the MLB Network, DAZN, the NHL Network, formerly of TSN, and a Canadian dude, Matt. Adnan Virk, Emmy Award winner. Did you know that?
Wow.
Well, now you know. Until then, Happy New Year. So long for now. This podcast has been produced by TMDS and accelerated by Rome Phone. Rome Phone brings you the most reliable virtual phone service to run your business and protect your home number from unwanted calls. Visit romephone.ca to get started.